The world entirely is at war.
Troops waiting for the zero hour.
This is D-Day.
They got one.
Veterans Chronicles. For the next hour, join host Gene Pell and an honored roster of heroic soldiers, sailors, and fighting aviators, recalling and retelling their personal stories from World War II...
A state of war.
...to the present day.
Allied Air Forces began an attack on military targets in Iraq and Kuwait.
Now the American Veterans Center and the Radio America Network present Veterans Chronicles with your host, Gene Pell.
Welcome to this week's edition of Veterans Chronicles. My guest is Jack Agnew, a member of the Band of Brothers from the 101st Airborne Division, 506th Parachute Infantry Regiment, made famous by the Stephen Ambrose book and the television series produced by Tom Hanks and Steven Spielberg. Jack Agnew fought in Normandy, Holland, and Germany, and he shares his story with us this week.
First of all, I was born in Belfast, Ireland. And I come over as only a wee fella, and my father had to come over 2 years ahead of time to establish before he could bring the fellow in. It's not like today, you walk in and say, here I am, you know. But then we established, we got to go live with friends, which was my mother's sister. And I played little baseball, and my father was an international soccer player, and my brother was a all-classic goalie in his high school years. So even my mother played soccer as a young lady, you know. But just a regular kid, and I liked to be out hunting and fishing, you know, and hiking and things like that. And the area where we hiked to, I liked it so much that years later I said I'm going to end up there. That's what I did. I ended up getting a lot and building a home, you know, establishing a family. But then, as I said, I went to criminology school and took firearms identification mainly. But at that time I was a junior in the NRA, and today I have the longest continuous membership in the National Rifle Association and the longest continuous instructor's rating since 1940. They have some of my items in the National Firearms Museum down there. So that's about the size of it. And I ended up in war work, SKF, making bearings. Of course, with that work, I could have got a deferment, but my brother had enlisted the year before me, and he stayed in all those years. And of course, I enlisted and put 3 years in. And since I could fly, I wanted to go Naval Air, and I didn't have a college education. So I went down, took the Army Air Force test, and they wanted me to be a bombardier navigator, which would have been a commission, but my mother always talked about World War I, when the German Zeppelins bombed London and all, and my father and her two sisters worked there, and Sadie died a terrible death with mustard gas. So I said, no way am I dropping bombs on people. So I said, if I can't fly them, I'll ride them. So I went down and signed up for the paratroops.
What were you, 18, 19?
19, I guess, yeah.
Where'd they send you?
Well, I picked up two other fellows at the local train station in Philadelphia, and we headed for Toccoa, Georgia. And we were on the mud flats there until we were assigned to regimental headquarters. And from there, they gave you a test. And that was when we initially started forming the 506. They gave you a test. If you had half a brain, you were in intelligence. And if you could take code without going wacky, you were communication. And the rest of us were demolition. And a great bunch of guys. And the training was rough. I think I forget how many tried to make it, but I think only 1,500 of the whole, all the men went through the training. Finally was chosen for the 506.
What was it like the first time you jumped?
Pardon?
What was it like the first time you jumped?
Well, I won't say it over this, but it was, open up, you SB. They 501 yelled Geronimo and all that stuff. I had no way. We were supposed to yell Bill Lee, because General Lee was our first commander before Taylor took over. But, I made my qualification jumps on January 2nd, my birthday, in Fort Benning. We trained 13 weeks at Tocoa, and because we hadn't jumped yet, they called us the walkie-talkie no-jumpy 506. So when we got down there, we had been in such good shape, especially running, because they had us up the mountain every morning and obstacle courses, and the instructors took the fellas pretty hard to come into Benning that already had basic training, you know, and to go into the airborne, and they would run those guys ragged. So we ran around the whole airport, and we get there, we said, let's go around again. Well, they didn't want no parts of us, you know, so we kind of got in a lot of trouble with the cadre down there because we were tougher than they expected.
So did your outfit ship out from Benning for Europe?
No, we, after Benning, we went on maneuvers in North Carolina, and we were demolition. We were called in the Dirty Dozen, because E Company and all the rest of the regiment, we're the ones that put them through the battle courses, so we're the ones that really trained them. And when Captain Sobel was with E Company and he got captured, that was us. That was regimental headquarters. Part of the training with the intelligence platoon and the demolition platoon, you know. So we put them through some rough stuff. And if you've seen the pictures going through the pig guts, well, we put them through the pig guts. So I guess they're still looking for us.
When and how did you get a commission?
Pardon?
When and how did you get a commission?
Me, I've been to PFC all the way through.
I thought Tim referred to you when we came in as Major Agnew.
No.
All right.
That was that lovely little lady down there with a major and with her Air Force wings.
Oh, yeah. I met her last night.
I was no major. I really didn't want to take charge of anything like that, because our first casualty was when we were running the companies through the battle courses. We had one little Polish kid, and he was really a nice kid, and he could run like a deer, man. He would leave us in the dust, and we would go and climb trees and put charges, nitro starts, on top of the trees, and when they'd come through the battle course, he'd blow the tops of the trees off them. Well, little Joe, he charged, we kept improvising everything instead of using the devices. That was our leader, Lieutenant Leach, then later Captain Leach, who got killed in Haginaw, friendly fire. But anyhow, little Joe got blown out of the tree and landed at my feet and my buddies, and another one that was our medic's feet. He was the first casualty. So another young fella came down with him, my name of House, and one of the jumps he went through high tension wires, clapped his chute, and his landed on his back. So we just kept losing kids all the time. So later on, getting into combat, and then we get reemplacements, they said, do what Agnew tells you. I said, whoa, wait a minute. That's your job. You're the officers, you know, because you never got to know the kids, really, their name, and the next thing you know, they're gone. What happened to him? Oh, he got captured or got shot up or something like that, you know. So I took it kind of hard, you know. So I wouldn't take, we had another fellow, Warmer, come in from the Rangers. And my one buddy that I buddied up with when they made a night jump in England, he got smashed up. So he was in charge of our squad. And this fellow came in from the Rangers. With a rating, they put him in charge of our squad. And I says, I didn't know this guy or what he can do. He didn't train with us, you know, so I was a little put out about it, because I was worried about the rest of our guys, you know, young kids coming in. And you want to know who's behind your back, and the same for them to know that you're going to be watching out for them, you know. So it's a little hard to take when you lose a good buddy that you knew, you trained all the way through with, especially demolition, because he was a West Virginia boy, and before we even got into demolition, he was a powder monkey. He knew more about explosives than the instructors at Benning when we got there, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's part of the background. And then from there, we went on maneuvers in Fort Bragg area, Tennessee maneuvers, and we weren't allowed to use the barracks because the maneuvers wasn't over, so we could use the latrines, but we had to sleep out in the pup tents in the field yet. So.
And well, then eventually you were moved off to England for more training and more maneuvers,
yeah, well,
right?
What we done when we went to Camp Shanks, and well, before we went, we had a big barracks fight, and that's part of the problem. Jake McNeese is one of the two Mexican Indians, their brothers in the same platoon, and Mike and Armando. And Mike, he was always taking a bath. I've never seen a Mescalero Indian so clean. Every time he turned around, he's taking a bath. Even in bivouac, he's taking a bath in the helmet, you know, with what water he had. And he's stepping out of the shower, and Armando couldn't hold his liquor, which Indians can't, so he's half crocked, and he's cutting all the pillows up with a knife and yelling, "I think we're going to Japan," with torn japs, and he's cutting them. Then somebody hit Mike with a pillow, and he's got, looked like an owl. He had feathers stuck all over him. And our lieutenant came up, and he raised Kane. He says, "You guys are going to clean this barracks up if it's up to 2 in the morning." So we're pouring water all over the floor, and we're on the second floor, and communications is underneath, so another fight starts. So we, free overseas, we had a good get-together, you know, part of the training. You know who you can depend on.
We're talking this week to Jack Agnew, one of the Band of Brothers from World War II. We'll continue after these messages.
You're listening to Veterans Chronicles. World War II.
The German news agency said today in a broadcast that the Allied invasion had begun.
Korea.
The armed invasion of the Republic of Korea by armed forces from Northern Korea constituted a breach of the peace.
Vietnam.
The curfew is in effect for the Saigon, Cholon, Jiezin area.
The Gulf War.
The skies over Baghdad have been illuminated. Bright flashes going off all over the sky.
A special thanks to veterans everywhere from the Radio America Network.
You're listening to Veterans Chronicles, presented by the American Veterans Center and the Radio America Network.
Welcome back to Veterans Chronicles. I'm Gene Pell, in conversation this week with Jack Agnew, a veteran of World War II and a member of the celebrated Band of Brothers. After completing stateside training, Agnew and his fellow soldiers set sail for England to prepare for the invasion of the European continent.
Well, we went on, I believe the name is a British ship, Cimmeria, and that was really a junker. And, well, I shouldn't say this, but is this going on the air or anything?
It will.
Well,
but we can edit it.
Well, we had a couple of weirdo limeys on the air, and they were giving us their bully beef and keeping the good stuff. They never got off the boat. Somebody threw them overboard. Oh, yeah, yeah. So they're messing with the wrong guys. I had nothing to do with that. But we almost hit another ship. I think it broke a rudder, and that was a 501. And they had to put in the, I think they put in the Halifax. And we went into, what's the matter with me? Into the English port. I'll think of it later. And then we were assigned as 506 to the London, Reading, Newbury area, and our division headquarters was in Newbury. And later on, like I said, I volunteered with dispatch rider because I didn't drink like those guys. I didn't know how to play cards because my mother's church was a regular home, not Quakers or anything like that, but we weren't allowed to have cards in the house. So these guys were all having a ball playing cards and dice and all that. So I didn't know what to do with myself. So I volunteered for dispatch rider. So I rode and got all the dispatches from division headquarters and took them to 1st, 2nd Battalion and the Red Cross girls. Yeah.
Now, did you know at this time what you were getting ready for?
Well, we didn't know exactly what we were heading for, but we were doing an awful lot of demolition training. And we as regimental headquarters demolition, we were training 1st Battalion, 2nd Battalion, and 3rd Battalion headquarters at a demolition group that we helped train, see. But we were supposed to be assigned to 1st Battalion headquarters in combat. And at that time, we had two officers had to go train with the British, and they had a Batman orderly. So I went with one of my lieutenants, Lieutenant Mellon. And I'm the last of the Mohicans, because the other young fellow was, enlisted man, was Ray Calandrera. And Ray passed away a few years back. And just 2 months ago, George McMillan, the other lieutenant, passed away. And Lieutenant Mellon, he got killed on D-Day. So I'm the last of the ones that trained with the British also. And I was surprised up there because I look at some of these guys are pretty old, you know. But when the British got wounded, there's some from Africa, you know, and they had to take their basic training right over from the start again. You know, I was pretty tough on some of those old guys, but then we were called back because just before we were supposed to jump out of the bomb base and called back because something was happening to getting ready for the invasion.
Well, on the day was supposed to have been the 5th, but the weather canceled that.
Yeah, well, see,
I guess you must have spent a pretty miserable night on the night of the 5th, thinking you were, going to go and now not going.
Yeah, right. I don't say everybody, but most of the guys are really anxious. Let's get this thing over with. You know, airborne's supposed to be a shock troops. Get in there and raise hell and blow up stuff and get out, you know. But it doesn't happen that way. Like, we ended up in the Netherlands 72 days on the line before we got relieved, you know. And airborne troops, you go in with what you got on your back, you know. Like, we were supposed to meet. Well, I'm in the Netherlands and forgot all about Normandy. But anyhow, in Normandy, we always participated with Colonel Wolverton, who was 3rd Battalion. So he wanted us, 1st Battalion section, to jump with him. And actually, our mission was the furthest in on D-Day, except those people who were dropped wrong. They dropped right on Carentan and whatnot. But we were dropped in right about Saint-Côme-du-Mont, and they dumped us out right on top of the town. And luckily, it says luckily, but one of our fellows, Flack, came up through the floor and busted his chute and was flowing all over. We pushed him on the side, and then we went out. But that caused a hesitation, which actually saved us, because we got past the town and dropped. There's only 5 of us left to accomplish the mission. And that was the first one I met. He was whimpering and crying, this guy. And I told him, you don't stop all our racket and shape up. I didn't know how anybody went through our training and got there like that, hysterical whimpering and crying. I says, I'll shoot your ass. I got to watch what I say. I said, I'll shoot right now, you know. So I think he was more afraid of me than the enemy. So later on, I found out he's went and surrendered.
When we return, Jack Agnew talks about parachuting into Normandy during the D-Day invasion, plus other combat actions in which he was involved in Europe during World War II. This is Veterans Chronicles on the Radio America Network.
Veterans Chronicles is now podcasting at radioamerica.org. Also available on Apple iTunes. Veterans Chronicles is presented by the American Veterans Center, an educational foundation dedicated toward preserving the legacy of America's servicemen and servicewomen of all generations. For more information on the American Veterans Center and its programs, visit the center's website at www.americanveteranscenter.org or call 703-302-1012. The American Veterans Center, 703-302-1012.
Heavy fighting is still raging.
3,639 wounded.
Red light, green light, and out, out. Get out.
Gentlemen, this is the real thing.
The brutal death march of Bataan.
Germany calling. Germany calling.
Right in the purest space.
Pass the ammunition and we'll all
cheer for Harlem on parade.
You're listening to Veterans Chronicles, presented by the American Veterans Center and the Radio America Network. Once again, Gene Pell.
Welcome back to Veterans Chronicles. I'm Gene Pell, and my guest this week is Jack Agnew, a veteran of World War II and one of the famed Band of Brothers, the men of Easy Company of the 506th Parachute Infantry Regiment of the 101st Airborne Division. These were the men celebrated in the Stephen Ambrose book, and later in the multi-part television series produced by Tom Hanks and Steven Spielberg. Jack Agnew parachuted into Normandy during the D-Day invasion. He fought in the 72-day campaign known as Operation Market Garden in the Netherlands, and he participated in the Battle of the Bulge, one of the pivotal encounters of World War II. We continue his narrative with that first jump behind enemy forces in France in June 1944.
When you get on the ground, a lot of people don't realize we had a lot of people killed because you have to get out of your chute, you got to get out of your Mae West, you got to open the Griswold valve, you got to put your M1 together that's in three pieces and load it before you can shoot back at the enemy. And I didn't want no parts of that. I figured if I'm going to sleep in my sleeping bag, my 45 will be sitting right on my chest. And you always free, you just flip the safety over. You got one in the chamber and the firing pin's locked, you know, you're ready to go with no noise. So. Okay. And we finally blew up the power lines first, and then we blew up the telephone cable. Then on the way running down to the bridges at the Dow, which was our objective, where it got hit real bad. And we still feel bad about it because we had a leaving, which you normally don't do, you know. And our orders were, even if you don't get in a firefight, take those bridges and hold them, you know, because if the Krauts would have come across those bridges, it may have been another Dunkirk. But the Panzer Division got to push them right back in the ocean, you know. So anyhow, we wired the bridges and we were cut off for 3 or 4 days. They didn't know we made our objective, and our own planes came in and bombed us. So we figured they know something we don't know, so we blew the bridges up. And for the first time this past year, I got back to the bridges on that side. So it's, that was our objective in Normandy. And then after that, when the troops came in from the beaches, we were relieved and we got together and then we, with a regiment, we took Carentan. So that was after Carentan, we spent 3 or 4 weeks there, and then went back to Lymington.
Well, it wasn't much downtime before Market Garden came along.
And, September.
You had to make another jump into Holland. September. I often think that that is a part of the history of that time that gets overlooked to a certain extent because it comes between D-Day and between the Battle of the Bulge.
Yeah.
But Market Garden was a very, very important battle.
Oh, yeah. Well, see, but that kind of annoys me today. I was just speaking to a young fellow that at breakfast there, he's in Desert Storm, and I said, what I can't understand is why they don't have airdrops, you know, like in Bastogne. The first day we went in on the 23rd, and we brought 441 tons of supplies in that first day. And I said, well, you can't do that today. I said, what do you mean you can't do that today? Did you ever hear of the Berlin blockade? The whole city of Berlin supplied by air. So we had Hell's Highway, one road up and down in the Netherlands. You think we'd have learned from that. Now they have Beirut, one road to supply up and down. And all the enemy does is just set up a machine gun and wait for you to run into it. You know, when you're, I can't understand with the big planes we have that we can't, you don't even have to land. You just fly in and drop a skid. I got If I wasn't born in Ireland, I'd run for president.
Well, the truth is that battle, is as important as it was almost lost.
Yeah.
And but well, I say that General Montgomery's to blame for that more than anybody.
Well, I call myself a limey bloke because I'm one of the few that still wears a British beret with British wings and all because I trained with them. But the first ones got to us was 2 days late in Eindhoven after we took the bridges. And then even on the way up to Nijmegen, they stopped and made tea. You know, hey, tea time, mate. And they take the biscuit cans off the Bren carriers and make tea, and the big Tiger tank comes out of the woods and runs over the Bren carrier and smashes it all up and never fires a shot, you know. And they say, hey, mate, you disturbed our tea. So that's a little hard to take, you know. And then when we got up there, one of our jobs was, well, we contacted with the 82nd at Nijmegen, and then we were assigned to the island. That's just between the Nieder and the Wall, across from Warmhain. And we were in an outpost there, well, in different locations they put us, and things we had to do as demolition men, 72 days on the line. And in September, in the Netherlands, you can't dig a foxhole too deep, you know, you hit water. So we were in there, the only thing we had was a raincoat, and you wake up in the morning and shake yourself, and the little forms of ice around you crack. And a lot of times I talk to the kids in school, and I said, we were so cold. I said, have you seen a pig pen with pigs in it? Oh, man, we're going to come in there and get warm, you know. But we stunk so bad, the pigs left. That's the truth.
Well, after 72 days on that line, you didn't get much rest. In fact, you didn't get any rest.
No, we didn't get much.
You were on your way somewhere else to a very, very important battle, and yet you didn't have any winter clothes. You didn't have any ammunition. No. You didn't have any weaponry. You didn't have any armor.
Yeah, well, we ended up finding a thatched cottage, and we used that as our headquarters. And then at night, we would send patrols out to the top of the dike, where Krauts, I call them, on the other side. So we have phone wire to the outpost, and on either side, about 200 yards out, was a listening post. And you went out there at night, and you didn't come back unless you were relieved. If you were relieved, you know, you couldn't go in the daylight because Armheim was higher. They could see every move we made, you know. So we were kind of pinned down there, too. But at least we stayed a little bit warmer than we were before in the hole in the ground, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we had one of our officers drive up in a motorcycle, and we told him, get the heck out of here in the daytime. I said, you're giving our location away, you idiot, you know. So we didn't take to him too well.
But you had been promised some time off after Market Garden.
Oh, yeah.
Instead, you get immediately moved into Germany.
No, what happened, 82nd came back first. And you know those guys, they got to town first, so they made such a fuss that we were to town by the time we got to go was restricted.
Mm-hmm.
So they spoiled everything for us. But anyhow, at that time they asked for demolition men to volunteer for Pathfinders. And my buddy Jake and Majewski more or less volunteered at the officer's request, trying to get rid of him. So I said, well, if you're going, Jake, I says, I'm going. And then the other fellows volunteered. And Lieutenant Williams says, my whole group's going, I'm going too. So we ended up being shipped over to England for further training. And it just so happens that that was only the 506 team. And it just so happened that the big push in the Ardennes started. And we were just happened to be there to be chosen for the mission to resupply. So on the 22nd, the 101st actually went in on trucks. And then the one of the fellows says, I jumped in Basstown. What do you mean it's in Basstown? I jumped off the truck. But anyhow, we had formed one team on the 22nd, and we were in the air, and the mission was aborted. So we were a little put out about that because, hey, our guys need us, you know, and they're down to nothing because most of what the fellows had was what they didn't turn in the Netherlands, you know. They went in with one or two clips of ammunition. And here these other fellows are marching out of Barstown with bandoliers of ammunition and everything else. So I said to one of them, we have a band of brother, Battle of the Bulge group. And I don't go down there too much because I'll get in trouble because one of the units that a lot of the fellows belong to it, I can understand it, but they're the ones that surrendered, the 106th. And I said, Bill Guerrero used to go down with us, you know, and I said, Bill says that he begged some ammunition off some of you guys. You're going out and bandly air of ammunition. And the guy says, I wouldn't get it. I said, you're lucky it wasn't me, because I'd have shot you right there, you know. They're going the other way with jeeps and everything, and our guys are walking into the battle. And it's a little hard to take, you know, after what you've been through. So, and then after that, we tried to set up, and we were blown out by the Germans. We had a corrugated roof over our head, and that was blown off. Luckily, nobody got hit. And then we finally set up, found a brick pile. And that's about, I just handed a letter to Don Burkett because he said it was wooden brick pile. And I just got that straightened out by a guy that was a young fellow there. But anyhow, we found this about 10 foot high and about 12 foot wide. And we knew the planes were already loaded and they'd be coming in low to get under the flak and the radar. So we wanted to find the highest place we could, so it ended up the brick pile. And I'm the guy on the top of the brick pile. I guided the first planes in, but they said, what are you doing up there? I said, because I'm the dumbest one. But I had to sit with a Eureka and then wait till I heard the planes that has the Rebecca, the sister set to the radar set. And then when I heard them come in, I told them to turn on the CRN-4, which is our main guidance unit. And that's about a 16-foot telescoping antenna with guy wires. And then for ground field, it's like steel tape, 16 of them, wanting to pull them out to set up your ground field. And then we turn that on. And they have a disc in that set that sends out a code to the airplane so they don't come in on a false code of some kind. And as soon as they fly over top of us, it's just like the air controllers at the airport. Mm-hmm. As soon as they flew over top of us, they start dropping supplies. So,
well, you finally prevailed there, and then you stayed with the unit all the way across into Germany to the end.
Yeah.
Concentration camps as well.
Well, after we were told to come back, I want my men back, meaning our 506 team. My buddy Jake McNeese, who never made legally PFC, was our acting first sergeant. And he stayed on. And a lot of people don't know that they made another jump when the 4th Division got too far ahead without supplies, and they jumped in front of them and resupplied them. Don't even hear about that. And then our team also didn't jump, but we sat on this side of the Rhine, and we put the 17th, flew over top of our sets and dropped as soon as they passed over us, you know. So we actually put the 17th over the Rhine. And their insignia is the Eagle Corps, you know. So in the marshaling area, we were the guards. And we went to the mess hall, they had chickens, we tied chicken feet on their shoulders, you know. Anything to disturb the troops.
Of course. Well, Jack, thank you very much for coming up and talking with us about some of your experiences.
You got me wound up.
Well, good. That's a good way to unwind, to get it out.
got to accentuate the positive feeling.
We've been talking this week with Jack Agnew, one of the Band of Brothers from the 101st Airborne Division, about his World War II experiences. Our thanks to him for sharing his story.
Jive up to the maximum, bring gloom down to the minimum.
That's it for this week's edition of Veterans Chronicles, produced by Tim Holbert for the American Veterans Center and Kenny Burns for Radio America in association with Pelcom Communications. I'm Gene Pell. Thanks for listening.
Well, Noah in the ark, what did they do just when everything looks...
A special thanks to you veterans for your service to our country.
The latest official report from Washington said that warships had broken off the action and retreated.
From the Radio America Network.